I'm Brian Wilson, joined here in studio today by Jim Garrity from National Review. Good morning, Jim.
Brian, always a joy to be with you.
It is. Well, thank you. I'm a joy. I'm good. I remind my boss about that when you leave, would you? Join us on the line, Katie Fang, who is a legal contributor over at NBC and MSNBC. She's a trial lawyer and partner at Berger Singerman, which is based in Miami, Florida, and always gives us very sharp and crisp legal analysis. Good morning to you, Katie.
Good morning, Brian and Jim.
It's good to have you. So the president last night learned that his immigration order is going to remain on hold. The Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, a three-judge panel, decided that the lower court, the district court in Seattle, was right to say it was reviewable and was right to put the temporary hold in place. What should happen next from a legal standpoint if you're the Trump administration?
Well, you have an option. If you're the Trump administration, you can actually appeal immediately from that Ninth Circuit decision to the Supreme Court of the United States. But as we all know, you've got an 8-justice SCOTUS right now, and that doesn't necessarily bode well because if they split 4-4, then you're kicked back to the Ninth Circuit. So maybe it's a better use of your time to do one of two things. Maybe go back to the drafting board and take another hack at that executive order, or you batten down the hatches and you prepare for the full-blown evidentiary hearing that's going to happen for purposes of the states to get their preliminary injunction. People need to realize that this was a temporary restraining order. It has a shelf life of approximately 14 days, although right now it's going to be more than 14. There will be full briefing completed by February 17th, at which point in time the court will set an evidentiary hearing date, and we will know when the testimony and the evidence will be taken for the states to be able to actually get their injunction. They may fail. The Trump administration may win at the ninth, before Judge Robart, but that's left to be seen at this point in time.
We should point out this is a question not on the merits of whether or not the president's executive order was constitutional, but really on a very narrow question about whether or not the lower court had the right to put in this temporary halt to his executive order.
Exactly, and I think that's important for people to realize as well, and thank you for pointing that out. I said this is the meat of the sandwich we're about to get into now.
Right now,
whether or not you could have actually done this restraining order or not. And so this is not the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals saying that Trump's ban is unconstitutional or that it will not succeed ultimately, even if it makes it as far as the Supreme Court of the United States.
Ms. Fang, Jim Garrity here. I remember the Deputy Attorney General, the Acting Attorney General, had said that she didn't want to defend this in court. It struck her as morally wrong, but she really couldn't point to a legal area where it was wrong. How do you feel the Department of Justice did in making the argument for this executive order? Do you feel like it was, cooking on all four burners, or was there kind of any sense of hesitation or maybe the not the best day for the DOJ lawyers when it came to defending this in court?
Wow, Jim, talk about putting me on the front burners on that question, huh? As a trial lawyer, I hate Monday morning quarterbacking lawyers, but I got to tell you, there were a couple things that I'm not sure people are aware of. One, there was a last-minute switch in terms of the attorneys for the DOJ that were going to argue before the Ninth Circuit. And that was because Jones Day, one of the law firms that actually feeds a number of lawyers into the White House administration, had filed an amicus brief. And because of that, the DOJ very carefully and thoughtfully said, you know what, we're going to take those lawyers out of the mix that used to work at Jones Day, and we're going to put new lawyers in. But I got to be honest with you, those new lawyers, maybe because it was literally hours before the oral argument happened, they stumbled. And I don't think that they were the most effective advocates. And again, please, strike me with lightning, right? I mean, I just was not thoroughly impressed with how they argued. They imputed a little too much to Trump himself. And that's dangerous because we all know that Trump, maybe he needs to, live by the adage that you attract more flies with honey than with vinegar. But we know that President Trump sometimes does not actually temper what he says. And when you try to make Trump the main driver of this executive order, and you make it seem like he was a lone man operating like a rogue operative, that kind of fed into this whole ammunition for the states.
You make an interesting point. I had not heard that there was a last-minute substitution. I mean, when you go in to argue a case of this importance and you're thrown into it literally hours before the arguments begin, it's very hard to be up to speed. Also working against the Department of Justice here is they were working at that time without an attorney general.
Yeah, I mean, you definitely need, if Sessions had been there, it might have been a little bit different. You always have to bring your A game. Again, not to suggest they were not giving the best that they could, but listen, last minute change in your lineup, that's going to affect you, especially when you have such a hot bench. That Ninth Circuit bench of three judges, they grilled the DOJ lawyer, grilled them. Mm-hmm. And it was via phone. This is awkward, you know, when you're doing things over the phone sometimes, not with you guys, of course. But when you're doing oral arguments, it's tough. And so, you know, they did the best they could. And ultimately, the Ninth Circuit, which we know was a very progressive, very liberal, you know, court of appeals, did what it did.
Yeah. So you think, go back to the lower court and get into the meat of the substance, right?
Yeah, I think so, because I think at the end of the day, there really was not a lot of analysis substantively by the Ninth Circuit on Section 1182, which is the idea that the executive branch has the ability to have a lot of, I'm not going to say unfettered, but a lot of discretion on how you approach national security matters. There was not a lot of substance to that. There was an interesting, I'm not going to go there, but hey, let's go there on the religious discrimination arguments that were brought by the state. And ultimately, the Ninth Circuit said in its 29-page opinion, we're going to leave that to when the actual full appeal comes to us on its merits. But they did mention it, which meant that it did weigh on them when they made their decision.
All right. I want to ask you about another thing that happened yesterday. It has to do with Kellyanne Conway. And we're going to actually talk to our audience about this and get their take on it in just a moment. So if you have thoughts about this, get on the line. Kellyanne Conway's, she's out there at the White House. She's doing one of these talkbacks on cable news. And, you know, the question came up about the president's defense of his daughter. And she took it in a different direction. She said, well, look, you know, they're going after Ivanka. And you know what? If you disagree with that, then what you should do, you should go out there and buy her product. Oops, that's a problem, right?
Well, yeah, so there is a federal statute, 5 CFR 2635.702, and I always mention the technical statutes if people want to go and read them themselves, and it's entitled Use of Public Office for Private Gain, and that's the short of it. You really cannot use your public office for private gain. However, you know, you have to give Kellyanne Conway just a little bit of some, cut her a little bit of slack here. She basically was saying, look, don't personally attack or don't go after, you know, Ivanka Trump and really just maybe go. Maybe she crossed the line when she says affirmatively go out and buy her stuff. Clearly she's been, quote, counseled. We don't know what that means. But is there an actual federal statute? Yeah. And if you're going to read it as a strict constructionist, then did she maybe cross the line? Yeah. But, I mean, look, you know, everything has to be taken in context.
I think you're right.
Everybody's failing to take things in context these days.
All right, Katie, thank you for that analysis. Great to have you on the show again.
Thanks, Brian and Jim. Have a great day.